Welcome back to the podcast, Safe Talk with Safe Start. Today's host, that'll be me, Tim Page Botter. I hope you're ready. A lot of information today about steering committee, so grab your paper, grab your pen. Sit down and listen to this discussion with Dennis Karnreich.
Welcome back to today's episode of Safe Talk with Safe Start. We're going to talk about an often overlooked yet critical part of your implementation with Safe Start, the steering committee. Now, before you click off this podcast, wait. I said this is critical. In fact, this is where most implementations fail. Yes, it's that critical. And no matter where you are in terms of your implementation process, I think you'll find something that's going to be useful in today's podcast. You could think of it as operational or the operational arm of Safe Start. In other words, if you have a robust steering committee, you'll have a robust implementation. So it's so important to the success of Safe Start and the implementation. We've invited a very special guest with us today. We have Dennis Karnreich, the Safe Start Director of Continuity Initiatives. Dennis has been with Safe Start since day one. Dennis, welcome. Hello. Your team is responsible for following up with clients periodically after implementations, which makes you somewhat of an expert on implementation success and or failure. Dennis, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's great to speak with everyone in Safe Start, and I'm looking forward to discussing the pros and cons and different things that we encounter with steering committees when we are on site as part of my team's efforts in their follow-up visits.
Cool. Well, that kind of makes you an expert, right? Well, specifically on how people fail. And when you have kind of a rollout in terms of Safe Start, when they roll this process out from an expert position and a follow-up position, you have some feedback for them. And in terms of Safe Start and the steering committee, I think from a process, how important is that steering committee?
Oh, the steering committee itself is extremely important to keep that continuity going and embed the Safe Start concepts and the process deep within a client's culture to make sure that it doesn't become, you know, the dreaded flavor of the month.
Right. So do people fail? How often do they fail? And when they fail, can they turn it around?
Absolutely. We've had clients who've really struggled with the idea of steering committees and being able to use them. Some companies are just not, as I like to say, committee-centric. And so as a result, that can be a challenge. But certainly when we go in to do a follow-up visit, that's one of the things that we focus on. And we've actually helped a number of our clients reform and launch a steering committee at that time so that they can then move on with the sustainability measures for the Safe Start process ongoing.
Okay, well, with all the rotating parts that go at the Safe Start implementation, do you suspect that steering committees or the steering committee process is where most failures occur?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think it's part of it and a big part in terms of where failures can occur. Certainly, if they're not doing their part in terms of promotion and integration of the concepts, it doesn't permeate into the culture for the long term. But of course, the other thing, and probably a topic for another podcast, is you need that leadership support as well. So normally one of those two elements are the big contributors to a failure.
Okay, so the lack of leadership support, and then of course, not organizing through a steering committee. And I've been on site, and when I drive through the facility, I can kind of get a glimpse of how that facility is working in terms of safety, if the messaging is there, and if the banners show things or the flags show things, even when I walk in through security or I'm greeted, if I'm greeted or not, I can get a good sense of where people are in the world of safety, but it doesn't mean that they can't turn it around. So from a consulting perspective, having those kinds of things come up gives us an opportunity. And I appreciate the fact that you said that, well, this is where typically implementations with Safe Start could fail. Now, I do agree with you that it's an ongoing challenge. And in terms of the pre-rollout campaign, when you get on site and you start to roll things out, and There's a lot of things going on. There's phone calls, there's account managers, there's things in the very beginning, pre-launch, that can be done. Now, for our listeners who have yet to roll out SafeStart, if there are any, I think it's important to point that out. Could you describe what pre-launch looks like?
Well, in terms of pre-launch, certainly getting the steering committee and the key leadership people to understand what SafeStart is and what they're undertaking and what their responsibilities will be, and then getting them to promote and get the actual employee base excited about SafeStart and a messaging that this is a different approach to health and safety than perhaps they've ever experienced from that particular company before. And so getting that messaging out, also planning the training. I've seen a lot of folks who feel, listen, we can just have a SafeStart consultant come on board. We'll start with doing the overview sessions with those folks. And then they never even though they've got certified trainers that they've had trained ready to deliver the remaining units of the course, they didn't plan for how, when and how those units would be delivered to every employee at the site. And that planning can really fall apart. If, you know, you have production issues, you have downtime, you have vacation time. If those elements haven't been considered as part of the steering committee plan for laying out the training, then the training quickly gets pushed aside and what should be delivered in 5 weeks to 5 months now gets into a year, year and a half, which you lose your continuity and value of implementing the process.
Yeah, you actually said a few things there. So I'm going to just kind of reiterate the most important thing from a consulting perspective, and you have this experience as a specialist in this, but when it comes to planning, you wouldn't recommend one person doing all the planning, would you?
Absolutely not. Certainly there are times when that has been successful, but if it's down to one person, the safety manager or the person responsible for health and safety training traditionally, that as their priorities change, as corporate perhaps downloads other responsibilities to them, they end up getting promoted, move on, they move on to other companies and leave the company, you lose that one single driving force. And that's why we suggest a committee that represents all areas of the company and are actually responsible, you know, as a group for ensuring the implementation of the process.
Okay, gotcha. And so that means pre-launch, we're looking at maybe getting a group of people together. And when you get that group of people together and you're all ready to go with SafeStart in terms of launching, they can help out with the schedule, they can help out with the feedback, and all that information comes together as a committee, magically called the steering committee. In addition to getting that schedule ready, you suppose they put any campaigns together, any launch signs, activities? Is there anything you'd recommend that they should be doing before a launch occurs?
Oh, most definitely. And to that end, when we come in on site, our consultant the first time to do that steering committee initial training, we talk about their responsibilities and what they need to do, and we help them to build a very concrete action plan. And part of that action plan in terms of promotion includes the SafeStart communication kit, which is, there actually is a training matrix of when to use the different promotional pieces that come in the kit, which consists of posters and banners, message templates, tent cards, a rollout schedule. And so that you can then, in fact, just go date by date and, okay, we're getting ready to do unit 3. We need to, before we do unit 3, put these posters around where they're visible within the facility, put these tent cards out to get people interested in the particular topics that we'll be touching on in unit 3. And it just gives a new visual. We try and really promote fighting complacency about the process and keeping people engaged with it. And so they need to change up the posters on a regular basis. We've mentioned that. I mean, my favorite line when I go on a follow-up visit is, if I've been out and I've been looking at The posters that are out there, I kind of do the white glove test and see if there's a little dust on them. They've been sitting in the same area for a while. And what I always say is, we really don't want to get complacent with the complacency posters, do we? Because eventually it becomes wallpaper.
Yeah, and of course, and then the bandwidth gets lower and nobody wants to look at those things anymore because it's just constantly the same stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. So pre-launch, you want to buzz, you want to start getting people excited about what's about to happen. Don't want to surprise it on them. You don't want to pop on them at the last minute saying, hey, this is about to happen, when it's already there. You want to get them ready for it, and that buzz gets created. And then in between the rollout, you've got the steering committee planning out certain things, just as you said, and then all that stuff that goes in the middle. And on the podcast with Chris Ross, we called it white space, that space in between units, practicing and moving forward with going and scheduling the next unit. All that white space activity isn't done or performed by one person. It's performed by the steering committee. So thanks for mentioning that, and I appreciate it. Now, as far as the extended application units, these are the units that you roll out after the regular core units, the critical error reduction technique units. These extended application units, which we commonly refer to as critical decision units, what are they for? Are they for refresher? Are they for retraining? Or what are those extended application units intended to be?
That's a really good question, Tim, and it's a misconception that a lot of our clients get is those units are in fact building upon the process. Larry wrote those over a period of multiple years after the original core cert unit course was launched, and they are in fact building on the concepts, and they're very topic specific on challenges that a lot of our clients have had over the years after implementing Safe Start with different things. So they're not a review. They by all means continue to reinforce the presence of the state to error pattern and how those critical error reduction techniques can in fact help in those cases. But he's talking about it from very specific situations that we deal with within our workplaces. So that's always something that I always enforce with when we're on follow-up visits, is to make sure we plan those, space them out, 4 to 6 months apart. I personally feel only doing two of those a year after the initial five units is the best way to deliver those, because we want them to be of value. It shouldn't be training for training's sake. We should ensure that the trainers have prepared, they understand the main teaching points of those individual units, and their stories are on point, so that the learning is taking place and they're getting the most value out of those units, and not just rushing through them as a type of review, if you like.
Right. Okay, that's good. We'll kind of refer to them as kind of best practices. In other words, we've got six incredible extended application units, but we could refer to them as six incredible best practices. So oddly, it's your department that goes and does the follow-ups, and in the follow-ups, you probably have found, I can probably predict, that the critical decision units is the least utilized tool out of all of our suites of packages that we deliver or implementations that we deliver. So would you be willing to come back for a deeper dive into critical decisions in the review units?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think they all have great merit in their own way. So speaking about those specifically and how to get the most value out of those, I think that would be really beneficial to your listeners.
Very, very cool. Well, then, now that we've kind of determined that we've got six best practices, let's kind of touch on them briefly. Because the steering committee, they do play a role in each one of those. But number one, following the prescribed training schedule is important. But talking to our audience about what you've seen out there, that would be examples of how not to do it. So in other words, what do you recommend on maybe how not to do it?
Well, certainly not having a training schedule at all, obviously, and just hoping that training is going to happen similarly to how we've delivered other training in the past can be an issue with this. This is classroom training. We need to make sure that we're getting some excitement, some buy-in from the folks. They need to happen in a relatively you know, prescribed time between units. We say 1 week to 1 month. And what we're looking for is time after each unit for the clients to go out and actually experience what we've been talking about and apply those techniques and make those observations of what Safe Start is really about. And we continue to build on that process through all critical error reduction technique units. So following that key schedule and making sure that you've considered all barriers to that schedule so that you have a proper plan in place that you can truly execute.
Okay, that's good. I was thinking we commonly refer to at the public workshops, at the very beginning, Jack will do his introduction and then all of a sudden he says, buckle up because you're going to be drinking from a fire hose. It kind of like with the implementations on site, those employees might feel like they're drinking from a fire hose. So you definitely recommend some timing between these units?
Most definitely, Tim, and for exactly that reason. You know, we're trying to build on habits and get people to look at things from a human factors perspective in terms of how safety has affected their own lives, not just at work, but at home and on the road. And so because it is a different approach, it does work better over time as people get to go out in the real world and experience this and see it for themselves.
Good, good. So that would be kind of best practice number one, is to roll these things out and give them an opportunity to basically be available to absorb the information. And through that absorption, you got some soak time. That means a week to a month between these units. And you also recommend maybe putting units one and two together, potentially in an overview. Anyways, thanks for that. I appreciate that. Now, from an importance of the steering committee, what kind of role do they play in that implementation strategy? Do they say, let's put all five units in one day and commit to implementing SafeStart in an 8-hour day? Or how important is the steering committee in providing that direction?
Well, going back to your analogy of drinking from a fire hose, we certainly would hope they wouldn't recommend doing all five units in one day. And believe me, we've had clients who've considered that, and even those that have tried it. And frankly, that it just doesn't work. It's never been successful. You need to stage them out. But the committee is very key in that planning. You need to have them work with your certified trainers, your leadership group, including, you know, people in production, et cetera, to see that it is a real practical schedule for training that takes place. Their job is to drive that schedule, make adjustments where needed, track who has missed training to make sure there's opportunities for those folks to pick up on the units that are missing and keep them moving through the process. Those are all responsibilities that we'd like to see the steering committee take on.
Oh, excellent. That's great. Great recommendations. In terms of the structure of the steering committee, who should be on it? What kind of people? What do you think?
Well, certainly a good cross-section. Obviously, you need some folks from leadership who sit on the committee. Ideally, you know, we don't want them to necessarily chair the committee, but we need to have somebody who can, frankly, take some of the ideas, get a working budget for them, be the voice of the committee with leadership. We definitely want some frontline supervisors, some people who are team leaders, et cetera, that are working on the floor, as well as some employees who have some commitment to safety, are known for their Safe Start best practices. You're going to have your safety manager. You're going to want that person or safety officer, whoever that might be, to sit in on the committee, obviously, as well. Perhaps human resources will be in there. An occupational health and safety nurse, if one has one, a good diverse group. Now, we don't want the group to be too big either. So you know, you can have people change in and change out of that committee over time. But ideally, you want to work with about 6 to 8 folks so that it's a big enough committee that you've got representation, but small enough that you can get a quorum and move fairly quickly on decisions and programs that you want to institute.
Perfect. Okay. Well, so we got 6 to 8 people, quite a diverse group of stakeholders from all over the organization to be on the committee, which is good. Any recommendation on who the committee chair should be?
Well, definitely we want a champion for safety within the organization. We want somebody who has that personality and can take charge as a chair. And having said that, I have seen some challenges when it is a strong, dominant person within the leadership group that takes on the role of chair and basically steamrolls the committee, if you like, and the whole purpose of having a committee is quickly lost. So, you know, you have to have that balance. Certainly, it's got to be somebody who wants to take on and has the ability and the time to take on that responsibility, but we don't want them to also shoulder the entire all the tasks and responsibility of the entire committee on their own shoulders.
Good, good. I'm going to tell you, I've been on site quite a few facilities and doing steering committee sessions for them. I have recommended the ones that are unionized to have either the shop steward or a union leader representative or even the president to be that committee chair and drive things from an employee ownership perspective, which could be later on down the road with one of our best practices. But do you have anything against being having union presidents, leaders be the steering committee chair?
No, that's actually a great point, Tim. And I do recommend that as well. Is that by all means, any place where the union is present, we want this to be a by the union for the union process. That's what Safe Start's all about. It's about keeping our brothers and sisters safe, whether it be, you know, at home, at work, or on the job. So it fits very well into most union mandates, and we would love them to run this process.
Perfect. You just said be our brother, sister's keeper. That's amazing in terms of a technology, because there is a critical error reduction technique in the implementation that does not get a lot of love or a lot of attention. And that's look at other people for their patterns and increase the risk of injury. So the steering committee could take a great part in implementing strategies around being our brother, sister's keeper, which you'll get to that third critical error reduction technique. So that's a great recommendation. Perfect. Thank you for that. All right. So we're moving on to the next best practice. Now, you've already kind of talked about it in pre-launch and putting up banners and signage. And then you also talked about the bandwidth of the signage in terms of it not being a dust test, which is a term you've used with our fearless leader, Kevin Cobb. He's always talked about dust tests with you, but that was your term. Is there anything else that you would recommend midway that they need to do in terms of communication?
Well, certainly having any type of contest, encouraging, you know, like you would have had in from Chris Ross, and as you're filling that white space, you're encouraging storytelling. The steering committee can provide a little award or recognition that whether it be gift cards or whatever the company happens to use to recognize people who are participating and showing that they're using the concepts and sharing those with their fellow employees. That's always a great way. We'll speak about more 24/7 contests, any type of posters. I mean, some clients, they produce calendars and hand out calendars to their company folks in terms of different concepts within Safe Start, and share they use a particular process where they take in different ideas and make them into a 12-month calendar of the concepts, which is very easy to do with the state's errors and certs.
Okay, that's good. Thank you for that. And the more visible that the company can be, the better potential that the people will see it. And like you said before in the pre-rollout, make sure you're changing those signs out. You don't want them to become complacent with the same information over and over again. So great for that. Number four on your list is integration of states and errors, as well as the critical error reduction techniques into anything where human factors might impact performance errors. Don't you think that's kind of a big job?
It's a huge job, and it's one that very commonly most of our clients do find challenging, and something that we find when we go in to do the follow-up visits, we have to provide a lot of insight and help with. And we work with the safety managers on site. We work with the leadership group, and we try and reach out to the other departments as well in quality and production about how the state terror pattern not just makes safety errors, but also makes the types of errors that can cause them headaches as well, and how they can use the certs within their realms of responsibility as well. So we do work with them. We want, you know, we give recommendations on how they can employ the state's errors and certs into their JHAs, how they can do it in terms of their near miss reporting. Those are very common areas that we put it into, certainly within their compliance programs, making reference to those human factors within the realm of what their compliance responsibilities for training are, and how it all adds to their personal safety of the individual is very important. So that's something that we definitely work towards.
Good. And then a lot of that stuff that we do in the rollout and integration can be done with an integration management system. But the best part about this is if you integrate, you can help keep SafeStart sustainable. And from a sustainability perspective, that's basically the name of the game right now. And people want things to survive, and they don't want this to become that quote of the day, flavor of the month. So what we've done, what your team has done, is to help in that regard for sustainability. And that is extremely important nowadays to a lot of people, because they just don't want things dying on the vine. So thanks for that recommendation. Really appreciate it. Now, let's talk about the importance of communicating the value for SafeStart around the clock for 24/7. Do you have any helpful tips in that regard?
Well, yes. And again, integration and the 24/7 message initially, this is something that draws a lot of our clients to SafeStart, is the fact that we're talking about mitigating state terror issues and improving personal safety, not just at work, but also at home and on the road, where, frankly, if you look at the statistics, where the real risk is, and reaching out to family members as well as the employee themselves. So as a result, it's a big part of what the steering committee does. Having family safety days, promoting the message with that. We've had clients who have, had young driver programs where they came in and used our resources on Safe Start on the Road, and actually had sessions with their employees' children who were getting ready to learn how to drive, so that they could in fact understand that state terror pattern and how it might contribute to them making errors and what they could do about it. And there's numerous ways you can do that in terms of posters, and sharing personal stories. A lot of the personal stories over the years come from more from outside of the workplace than at the workplace, because again, that's where we're more likely to be hurt. One company that I was really impressed with, they actually had people for a contest shared stories of things that they did, their favorite hobby, their favorite pastime, whether it be horseback riding or hunting, et cetera. And what they did was they all had lots of stories involving the state terror pattern and certs, and either an injury or a near miss that they had encountered out there away from the workplace. And what they did was they took a picture of that person doing what they love to do, whether it be on their horse or out in their hunting stand, et cetera. And then below it was the actual SafeStart story. And they framed these in little 8x10 posters and put them all around the plant. And you would walk through the plant and you'd say, hey, wait a minute, I know who that is. And then you would read the story. So not only did it reinforce the concepts of SafeStart from a 24/7 message, but it also got people to understand and learn more about the people they work with and what they were interested in. So it was just a win-win all around.
That stuff makes me feel good. There's no empirical evidence of this. It's all anecdotal. I will say, every time I go back to visit, the more active that I see family events, coloring posters, children events, the more of that I see when I return to a facility after its initial implementation, I find it has a direct relationship, and I wish I could come down and put this on paper and make it empirical. But every time I see them doing really good work in regards to the 24/7 piece, I see them making an immediate impact to their metrics. And there is a correlation in my mind, and I wish we can do a better job of following up on that. But I bet you the steering committee can find a way to make that impact correlation themselves. The more we do here, the better we do here. And what you said was extremely important. So thanks for that.
I think you make a very good point, Tim. And if you look at any of our truly successful clients over the last 21 years, they've done a remarkable job of that. And frankly, most of our best ideas, we've stolen from them.
You mean we steal shamelessly? We best
absolutely,
practice?
Absolutely.
It's all about best practice. That's good. Thanks for that point. All right. So rounding out your top six, ensuring leadership buy-in. That's important. You said that right up front in your intro, and getting that support at all levels of the organization, how important that is. So there's a lot to unpack in that small, short statement. So I'm going to break it down into three specific things. Can you explain a little bit about the buy-in, a little bit about supporting the steering committee, and of course, at all levels of leadership? What do those three things look like to you?
Okay, well, in terms of actual buy-in, by all means, the phrase that we commonly use at SafeStart is, you need to walk the walk yourself and not just talk it. You need to understand SafeStart, be using it and internalizing it personally and demonstrating that to your organization so they'll want to do the same. And that's something we work really hard with leadership on. We want them to understand that this isn't just for the employees, because it's a 24/7 type approach, because the process works the way it is. It's important for all of us, from the CEO down to the part-time contractor, can all benefit greatly from SafeStart. So getting leadership to demonstrate their understanding and reinforce what they feel is the importance of this process to the safety and well-being of their entire employee base is huge in making it go forward. And in terms of actually supporting the steering committee, by all means, some of the leadership needs to sit on that steering committee. The other thing I commonly ask them to do and is to give them an actual working budget. You know, don't just say, oh, it's part of safety, or don't worry about it. I mean, quite commonly, even our own folks at SafeStart proper, the company. I remember going to the general manager after we do our own follow-ups and saying, we need an operating budget for the steering committee. And our general manager, Barb, looked at me like I was silly, like, Dennis, for SafeStart, we will never not approve of any type of a promotion or anything internal we can do, and that requires a little bit of money to make it happen for promoting SafeStart within our own organization. But the point is, if you actually have a working budget, then the committee feels an obligation to work with that budget. And I don't care if it's $10 or $10,000. If they know what they have to work with, they'll take a responsibility to use that money wisely and make sure it is used for promoting SafeStart out there. So it's something I'm very, very emphatic about with leadership, is that please provide a budget to that steering committee. And that is one way you can definitely support them. And I'm sorry, Tim, you had a third item that I didn't get.
You mentioned all levels of the leadership. Who is that? What are those specific people?
Well, certainly corporate support is always important, and hearing from corporate that they believe in the process. You know, a lot of times we start with a single site, and perhaps it's a champion within that site that wants to make SafeStart work. But they need to understand at a corporate level what SafeStart is and be able to support it. Certainly at the plant level, I mean, from the plant manager, down to the team leaders, they're all leadership. Even the unofficial leaders, as you said, union leadership, et cetera, at all levels, because Safe Start is a 24/7 process that applies to all of us, we all need it personally, and we need whoever our direct reports are to show our buy-in and understanding and application of the process for it to truly be successful.
So you mentioned all levels of leadership, all the levels, executive management, supervisor, everybody at the facility and corporate, those are all people that you want to support. That's great. But in your follow-ups and getting feedback from consultants, do you ever find that there are secret leaders that don't have a title, like maybe influencers on the floor that should be involved as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. And those were those, as I said, the unofficial leaders, if you like. Yeah. They are very important. I mean, those are the people that have been around the company for years and years. And when there's a challenge or something going on, even though they may not be responsible for direct reports, that's who the people go to when they want a question answered or they have an issue that they need to deal with, and they ask for those opinions. Those unofficial leaders are huge. And recognizing them and getting them involved and bought into the process and supporting it will do a great value in you being able to embed this within your safety culture long term.
Good, thank you for that. Influencers are important. They can make or break. Right? People usually rally around them. It doesn't matter if it's a negative opinion or a positive opinion, or in our case, a affirmative opinion. And getting them on board is extremely important. Having them on the steering committee could even be more important. So thanks for that. Now, kind of the last question here, Dennis, kind of wrapping things up. I got to ask, for those that are new to Safe Start, or even the ones that haven't been involved with Safe Start for many years, communication is key, particularly at the supervisory level. And I think it would be a great place to wrap up today's podcast to tell me a little bit more about SafeLead. It's a great tool to engage supervisors. So could you give us a little insight on what that looks like?
Oh, sure. Absolutely, Ted. Yeah, SafeLead is, I'm very excited about this new program that we've put together. And what I've seen over the years, and it was one of the reasons that I advocated so strongly that we developed this particular program, is that the struggle is at the frontline leadership. That they're, you know, how do we get those people and how do we give them, impart both the knowledge and the communication skills around safety to that frontline leadership, whether it be your supervisors or your team leaders? Because those are the people with their direct reports who are interacting on a daily basis. And for them to truly understand human factors and the role they play in terms of personal safety, production errors, quality errors, and being able to see that and communicate it both to their direct reports and, frankly, up the ladder as well, to look for ways they can improve safety and production and processes within an organization is huge. And so that's what we're doing with SafeLead. It's a very hands-on, one-on-one, two-on-one at the most, working with our consultants directly with those supervisors to discuss, you know, and get help them understand their personal responsibilities for safety, what that means, what are some traditional safety tools that they can use and apply to recognize issues within their organization, and then how do they communicate that in good times and in bad throughout their organization. So I think it's a fantastic program, and it's just so much fun watching the supervisors take that when you're on site and run with it.
Yeah, I've got some good experience in that realm too. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm on site at a customer. I won't give the customer's name, but 75% of their supervisors were hired fresh out of college, and they might have some really good skills technically, but their soft skills wane, and they don't know much about risk assessments. They don't know much about how to deliver that communication back to the employee. And I think what you said there was important for our listeners, because it can set the supervisor up to, one, identify potential hazards that they wouldn't recognize before, two, they can deliver that communication to employees. And three, supervisory traits within SafeStart, it helps them with that support, as we were talking about a little bit earlier. So incredible. Thank you for that, Dennis. And we're out of kind of out of time. So we started off today by saying this is definitely a critical step in the SafeStart journey. And if we didn't answer a question that someone may have, can they contact you directly?
Please do. It's dennis.c@safestart.com anytime.
Right on, Dennis. Thanks for that. And then I want to thank you specifically, you, Dennis. You've got some great experience. And like I said, you've been with SafeStart since day one. I hope you'll come back at some point. And always thank you for listening. And of course, if you found this episode useful, please share it with someone. And until next time, I'm Tim Page Botter with Safe Talk with SafeStart. We'll see you down the road.